when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Well, good morning,
good afternoon,
good evening to all you dear precious Blood River Radio fans out there in the world, no matter where you are. You're listening to Blood River Radio. My name is Eddie the Bombardier Miller, and in case you didn't know, today's date is March the 12th in the year of our Lord and Savior 2022. And as we always say here on Blood River Radio, there is no name under the sun which man can be saved other than Jesus Christ. Never forget that. Another thing, people, you know, if you've been around Blood River Radio, you know we always start with a prayer. So if you will, even if you're not a Christian, just to show respect to our show, please, if you will, bow your head. Almighty God, Almighty Father, the maker of heaven and earth, the maker of all things seen and unseen, you, Lord, who spoke the very existence of the world just by speaking it into existence. Lord, we come to you humbly. We ask you to grant us peace, to grant us wisdom. Give us courage, Lord. Lord, let us have the wisdom to know who our enemy is. Give us the courage to fight that enemy, Lord. Let us always do your will, Lord. And Lord, Blood River Radio, we'd like to be the consummate Christian, but in the spirit of King David the warrior. Lord, please bless this show. Let us always accomplish something in your, and let us always give you all the glory, Lord. I ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Tonight, people, I've got to read you, if you also know the drill, we have to go to our donors, because without donors, there is no Blood River Radio. There would be no Liberty News Radio without you donors. We have Miss Janice, my little sister from up in Tennessee. She sent in her donation. She usually donates every quarter. She is the wife of, you know, Rich, or our brother Rich. Y'all know Rich. Also, James in Washington State. James is another stalwart supporter. He sent in a nice donation, and we certainly appreciate that. We have I'm always excited about new donors. We have the Samuel in Birmingham sent in a nice donation and a nice letter. And we have Mr. T, and it's dated March 7th. He says, "Dear Eddie and Blood River Radio crew, I just wanted to say thank you for your great shows week after week, and I want to send a donation. I think you are doing the Lord's work in our days. Also wanted to say how much I like the recent shows with Dr. Hill discussing Ukraine's situation. You are the only ones I've heard who understands that the Ukrainians are not the good guys. The Ukrainian government, I mean. The people are being played as usual. Has anyone noticed the similarities between the way Russia is being treated now and the way Germany was treated in the early 1930s? Basically, the West has declared economic war upon Russia, just as it did to Germany then. I didn't get into comparing Putin to Hitler, but the response of the bankers, credit companies, and media are all spooky in the similar way we're responding. Keep up the good work, sir, and God bless you, Blood River Radio." The second hour, it's going to be a kind of a continuation of tonight. We have landed this precious lady on tonight. I'm going to let her introduce herself in just one second, but I guarantee you will be spellbound, and you may have to get you some Kleenex if you're like me, because even though I'm a fiery warrior, I'm also very sentimental, and I love people, and some of these things can literally make me cry. So, I'm just going to call you Miss Leah. Miss Leah, tell the audience exactly who you are.
I'm Lee McMichael. My husband is Greg McMichael, and my son is Travis McMichael. They were just convicted of felony murder, malice murder, and a federal hate crime. This occurred on February 23rd of 2020. We had a rash of burglaries for about a year and a half. It seemed like it was like two or three times a month. We had a Facebook page, and you could get on it, and it would say, "Everybody lock your doors, he's back or she's back." It was constant. Our neighbors who have children got to where they would not allow their children out at night to play or in the evening to play, because there was always a suspicious person hanging out in the neighborhood being reported. Of course, in the trial, they played this down and said there was no burglaries. That's because probably people didn't call, because the police, after somebody takes everything out of your car, there's nothing the police can do about it. In February, a neighbor was building a house on the river, a few houses down from us, and he had, I think, $2,000 worth of property missing off his boat, electronics, and he reported it. Then he put cameras up, someone going into his house while he was building it himself. So there were no doors, no windows, just frame. And he put security cameras up so that he could see what was going on. And he caught a man on his, a black male on his dock one time, and a couple of times in his house, the same male, just plundering through the house.
Wow.
In his house. Okay. With the, you know, it was a frame. That's the prosecution made it sound like, well, he was just a, they called him a looky-loo. You know, he just went to look around and see what was going on. But that was still the man's house. It's still burglary if the intent is to steal. They did not see him stealing anything. Nothing was taken except before he got the cameras, that property was taken. So my son was the week before this happened on the 11th. When he came up to that house that was under construction, he saw somebody duck up behind a porta potty that they had in the front yard. And so he backed up and shined his lights on him. And when he did, the guy reached in the front of his pants as if he had a gun. And then he went into the house. So my son came back and got his cell phone. He left his cell phone and he got his gun and he went back and he sat in the truck and he called the police. And they played that recording on trial, at the trial. The neighbors had been on the lookout, but because the man that owns the house lives in Douglas, so he would call a neighbor and have him go check out the house whenever they saw this guy in the house. The neighbors had been on the lookout, so the neighbors came out that day. They called the police. The police came around, and they shared the video of the guy in the house that night. Everybody had seen this guy in that house. The next week, on the 23rd, my husband was out here in the driveway using his truck tailgate for a table. He was trying to upholster some boat cushions, and he looked up and saw Aubrey, the guy, just hauling butt down the road as fast as he could go. And Greg is a retired police officer. I mean, he was in it for 30 years.
And Greg is your husband. He's your husband, Mr. Greg McMichaels. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. So he knew it was the same guy that was in that house. And he came from that direction, hauling butt. So he ran and grabbed Travis. Travis got his gun, and Greg got his, and they jumped in Travis's truck. And they had the car seat in there, so Greg was piled up on the car seat. And when they backed up, they saw the other neighbor who called the police point waving in that direction. So they, you know, well, he's done something. So they took off after him, and I don't know exactly the pattern that they took, but they were trying to get him to stop. He wouldn't stop. Travis said he had a wild look in his eye. The other Roddy got involved, the neighbor down the street. He didn't know my husband very well. They didn't know each other very well, but he got involved and ended up filming them. And after Aubrey, Travis stopped him three times, you know, and said, hey, come on, talk to us. Tell us what's going on. He could not see their guns because they had it beside their legs. And he kept going. So Travis parked, as you can see on the film, he pulled up, parked in the road. He said, I'll just sit here and wait for the police to come. And he saw Aubrey come down the road toward Travis. Now, he did this a time before and turned around and went in the other direction, but that was not told in court. And Travis stepped out with a shotgun, and when he did, he turned directions and went the other way. Then he came back, turned in the truck, and started running toward Travis. So Travis picked up his shotgun. He cut across the truck went beside the truck. Travis stepped out in front of the truck to see where he was, keep his eyes on him, and he darted across the truck and started beating Travis in the head and grabbing the shotgun.
Miss McMichael, let me go back just a second. Okay. I want to make one point clear. Now, the truck was stopped at least one point, and the suspect had run into another direction, but yet the suspect turned and came back to the truck. Is that right? Did I understand that right?
Yes.
Okay, I want to make that that's a vital, vital point. So proceed. I'm sorry I had to interrupt you. I wanted our audience to get that point exactly clear. Go ahead.
And, of course, it's all filmed. Travis has been in the Coast Guard for over 10 years. He had training, shotgun training, also de-escalate the situation.
And by the way, Travis is the son. Travis is your son, right? I want the audience to know that.
Yes.
Yes, and Greg. So this is Mr. Greg McMichael and their son. Miss Leah and Greg are the husband and wife. As Travis is the son. So proceed, if you will, Miss Leah.
Travis said he was a boarding officer in the Coast Guard. He was at the West Coast. When he went into the Coast Guard, of course, he went to Cape May, and then he went to Alameda, California. And he was down in the West Coast, you know, boarding boats for drugs down there. So he had pretty extensive training on how to de-escalate the situation. Travis was not the aggressor. He would not go out there and try to attack someone. You understand what I'm saying? He would try to talk you down. That's the way he was trained. Greg, in his 30 years of law enforcement, was never written up, never had to use excessive force. He always treated people with respect. One of his officers that he trained told me that he always said, you open a locker, you've got a badge, you got your uniform, you got your gun, but they don't give you integrity. And that's what you got to have to be a good police officer. Sure. And so he also told me he taught him to treat people with respect, no matter who they are or what they've done. You treat people like you want to be treated, and that's the best way to keep from having to hurt somebody or getting hurt. And so 30 years, no write-ups whatsoever, nothing. So anyway, Travis, you know, like I said, I don't know the pattern of how the chase went through the neighborhood. I know it wasn't a chase. It was at first, but Travis was parked, and Aubrey ran to him. Aubrey
yes, ma'am.
Had free reins to run across the yard. Of course, in one of the trials, they said that Travis would have shot him in the back, which is, if Travis was going to shoot him, he could have shot him long before that happened. So that would not have happened.
Ma'am, I got to make one more comment. You know, one vital point you've made. One, Mr. Brian Williams was prosecuted and convicted for first-degree murder because the audience said that his truck was blocking the path of escape for the suspect. But I think you have proved that that's falsehood because the truck was, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. The truck was stationary. The suspect had run away from the scene. He returned to the truck, and he had to run all the way around the truck to get to a Travis to attack him. Am I right there?
That's right. He ran around.
Yes, ma'am.
What's his name? Roddy was behind him because he was filming. But that road that where he attacked Travis, that road in front of Travis, he was going across. That goes out of the neighborhood. But, of course, he did not want to hit that road because he saw the neighbor on the phone when he ran out of the house. And that's the entrance of the neighborhood. The police were coming. And Mr. Aubrey was on probation when this happened.
Yes, ma'am. Do you know, I happen to know why he was on probation. Would you tell the audience why he was on probation?
I think it was when he shoplifted a TV out of a Walmart.
Yes, ma'am. He had this. I'll chime in here. This suspect, Aubrey, he had been multiple felony convictions. One, he was convicted of felony shoplifting from Walmart. Walmart actually called him the jogging shoplifter. He had also been convicted of carrying a handgun, a loaded handgun, on a public school grounds, convicted of that. He'd also been convicted of attacking armed police in the past. His own mother, for years, had told the police she was afraid of her son. He was on psychotropic drugs, supposed to be, but he was not on these psychotropic drugs at the time. The man was known to be a violent schizophrenic. I just like the audience to know what kind of person this was. So if you, also, Ms. Michaels, before we go any further, how can our listening audience get money to you, get funds to you? What is the best way?
We have a Gifts and Go account set up. You go under Gifts and Go, and you can hit Michael, or you can hit my name, L-E-I-G-H, which is Lee Michael, and it will come up, the website to appeal.
You mentioned your family background, so I'd like to let this audience know. Now, if I'm not mistaken, your father was a medical doctor, a well-respected medical doctor in the community. Am I right?
He was. He was a physician in this community. Moved here in 1959 and was a physician here until he passed away in 1996. Yes, and he was well-respected, well-loved. He was one of those physicians that worked for literally corn and peas. You know, if you didn't have the money, I'll take some corn, or I'll take, you know, garden vegetables. One of those fellas. And he was well known and well loved. And my husband grew up here. His family was known, well known and loved all of their life here. Travis was very popular in high school. He's still got a lot of friends that have been supportive. But you know, we felt that the community really turned on us when all of this came about. It was,
yes, ma'am.
You know,
yes, ma'am.
It actually started when the tape was released, which Greg is the one that released the tape.
One more item, Miss Leah. Your son, as my understanding, was, of course, we've heard your husband, Greg, was a decorated 30-year, highly respected police officer. Never one single write-up. Your son, Travis, was highly respected, a decorated man in the Coast Guard. Stellar reputations. These two people, I want our audience to, I want that to sink in. Stellar, absolutely salt of the earth people. And so going back to you, Ms. Michael, I hope I didn't talk over you, but I want my audience to be absolutely clear on what kind of a family we've talked about that's been persecuted. So if you will proceed, you were telling us about how the community reacted. If you will, let us know how they reacted during the so-called trial when the armed blacks and whites were out in front of the courthouse. So go ahead, Miss Leah.
Well, let me get back to Travis a minute. When you say,
oh yes, ma'am,
about
yes, ma'am.
Reputation. Travis had when he was a Coast Guard, a lifeguard when he was 15 years old in the summers, because this is a coastal community. And when he was 17, he was a lifeguard at a bereavement camp. I worked for hospice, and it was a camp for children that had lost their parents or someone they loved. And I think the age range was like 7 to 12. And we did a camp over a weekend in the summer for these children. They had a pool at the facility. So Travis was hired to lifeguard that Saturday at the pool. And there were a bunch of adults and children in the pool. One of the adults there that I worked with said they saw Travis jump in the pool and thought, what in the world is he doing? And when they looked, he was bringing a child up from the bottom of the pool. It was a little black boy that was drowning. And Travis saved him at 17. And then in his Coast Guard career, he saved several people. I think one of them was a couple that hit the jetties in Jacksonville and their boat sank. He saved them. So he was, outstanding.
Yes, ma'am.
And Greg, like I said, was a police officer for 30 years, and he saved a man in Rota, Spain when he was in the Navy from drowning on the beach. And that was a black male also. I mean, he's got the accommodations for it. Both of them do. So, I mean, this is, they are outstanding. But anyway, back to the community. Yeah, there was, they had a, it was like a circus environment. They had protests outside the courthouse.
Now, who was it had the protest?
They had the new Black Panther party with their weapons. They had caskets. They toted around the courthouse with my husband's, my son, and Roddy's name on it. in a hearse. They had food trucks parked around the courthouse to feed people. It kind of reminded me of ancient Rome before you throw the Christians to the lions. You know, it was a big party outside. So, and it was sad. There were billboards in the on the major highways that basically were like justice for Ahmaud. One of the county commissioners made the comment. I mean, they had meetings weekly, I think, about security. But one of the county commissioners made the comments that, you know, we were praying for justice for Ahmaud. So, you know, it was not fair from day one. When the video came out and the press got a hold of it, they came up with that narrative of a black male jogging through a white neighborhood, which this is not all white neighborhood, that a black male was jogging through a all white neighborhood and was chased down and killed by three white men. And that narrative has stuck. And nobody has heard our story. I don't dare talk to the mainstream media or the press because they twist it.
You can call me anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'm always here. Blood River Radio is always here. Tell the people one more time, do you have a post office box where people can send checks, money orders?
I prefer it to go to the GiveSendGo account.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I just want to make sure.
That's
okay. I just want to make sure of that.
Box.
Yeah. Yes, well, I wanted to make sure.
That way I can keep track of it and people can see how much is donated. And I've got a separate account that money goes into is just for new trials for my men and new lawyers. You know,
yes,
lawyers,
ma'am,
and trials and whatever I have to do for my guys.
We talked to, I'm not going to give his name, but we talked to the investigator who worked on your case, and we're supposed to have him on in a later day. But listen, Ms. McMichael, we've got to wrap this up because we have another person coming on. I would love to get you on again next week. Each week as it unfolds, so we can get this word out. So is there anything, before we go, we got to wrap this up, but how is it looking? I know your son and husband were also convicted of a hate crime in federal court. I don't know if the other fellow, I keep calling him Brian.
Yes, looks Brian like you, was also. Brody,
they were all convicted of hate crimes. So, and we'll be in contact with you. And I will give our audience updates if you can't come on. It would be great if you could come on, but if you can't, you can work through me, Blood River Radio, and we'll give the people updates on how it's looking for a retrial, how these dear men are holding up in prison. Their very lives are at danger. It's just what a travesty. Well, Miss McMichaels, Miss Lee, I feel like I've known you all my life. Is there anything you'd like to say to the audience before we have to let you go?
No, I just want to say I appreciate the support because I feel like I've been on an island by myself. People cannot say anything, cannot support me here. There's fear, attacked. I mean, verbally attacked, canceled culture. Yeah, even the neighbors were afraid to come to court. They couldn't testify. Friends were afraid to come to court. It's horrible. It's horrible.
Well, I've got to let you go, but I'll just chime in. The only opinion I'll give, it's I held those people very low esteem that are that fearful. But then on the other hand, when you have new Black Panthers carrying semi-automatic rifles and shotguns outside the courtroom, I can fully understand their fear.
Well, they were also doing it in the neighborhood. They were also doing it in the neighborhood.
My God almighty, in your neighborhood. The armed protesters in your neighborhood. People, please chew on that. But if all possible, she'll be coming on again in person. If you can't, we'll be giving you live updates because Blood River Radio is going to maintain a contact with her constantly. Thank you so very much, Leslie. I wish we could do more for you. God bless you. Please pass our love on to your husband and your son and Mr. Brian. And thank you so much for coming on. I wish we could do more for you. And maybe, who knows, I would tell people to pray, like the Apostle Paul said, pray unceasingly. So thank you so much, Ms. Michael. Michael, sir, we'll be in contact with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
A mosque in the Ukrainian port city of Mariupol has reportedly become the latest target of Russian shelling as the invasion continues. More than 80 people, including children, were sheltering there, according to Ukrainian officials. The number of casualties is not known. The city has already been hit hard by the Kremlin. The estimated death toll was more than 1,200 since the start of the invasion. Meanwhile, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky continues to encourage his people to resist the Russians. He said the Kremlin would need to carpet bomb the capital, Kyiv, and kill its residents to take the city. Over in China, they are reinstating COVID restrictions to limit the spread of the coronavirus in several cities. The country is dealing with a spike in infections, with less than 600 new confirmed cases reported on Friday. The Texas Supreme Court stopped the last challenge to the state law that practically bans abortions in the state. This is USA Radio News.
Have you or someone you know used heartburn medications Zantac or ranitidine and been diagnosed with cancer? Zantac and ranitidine have been positively linked to cancer. According to the FDA, Zantac and ranitidine contain NDMA, a known cancer-causing agent. NDMA has been positively linked to cancers of the bladder, pancreas, esophagus, liver, and stomach. Even in single doses and in smaller doses over time, NDMA is one of the strongest proven cancer-causing agents. Call 888-960-1233 or go to ZantacMoney.com. You may be entitled to substantial compensation without going to court if you or a loved one have taken these products in the past 10 years and been diagnosed with cancer. Call now to see if you qualify for free. Call 888-960-1233 or visit ZantacMoney.com to get what may be owed to you. You may be entitled to a cash reward. Find out now at ZantacMoney.com or call 888-960-1233 to see if you qualify for free.
A Wisconsin man with a long rap sheet is about to go to trial for allegedly running over people during a Christmas parade.
Daryl Brooks Jr., the man accused of driving through a Christmas parade deliberately and killing six people in Wisconsin, will go to trial in October. Brooks Jr. appearing in court on Friday, where a judge ruled his trial will start October 3rd. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
A Columbus, Ohio police officer has been cleared of criminal wrongdoing in the shooting death of 16-year-old Makia Bryant. She was fatally wounded by Officer Nicholas Reardon as she swung a knife at a young woman. Police were called to Bryant's foster home about a group of girls threatening to stab other household members. The Justice Department is now doing a review of the Columbus Police Department. Nervousness over Russia's invasion of Ukraine caused a fifth straight losing week for the Dow, which closed down Friday 230 points. The Nasdaq lost 286 points. The S&P 500 was off by 55. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Blood River Radio audience, thank you so much for tuning in. Just in case you hadn't figured it out by now, we had to take that first section earlier today because dear Mrs. Lee McMichaels, I think I could never get straight if her name was Leah or Lee. I'm not very good at names, but we had to tape that session earlier. That's why it seemed that a little bit strange. In fact, I would just thank you. I'm just Cameron just told me that it's Lee. Her name is pronounced Lee. But anyway, we had the tape a little bit earlier, and we had a dear lawyer listening into the show. Everybody knows Sam. I'm not going to say his last name, but I'll tell you the reasons later. But he forgot to mute his phone. We had a lot of extraneous noise there. And so I'm just apologizing for that a little bit. But that was I can't believe we got that lady on there, Miss Lee McMichaels. You know, so if you will, people, if you'll keep tuning in, we'll give you further updates on that. I'm going to try to stay in touch with her. But before we go to, we have Rand on the line, and I think Mr. Buddy's going to call in a few minutes. But we've got to go. I've got to tell you a little update. She told me some things I didn't know about the case. For instance, I didn't know that the new Black Panthers were up there in front of the courthouse with semi-automatic weapons. I mean, she said on the phone, she said machine guns. I doubt seriously if they were really machine guns. I mean, surely, God, they can't get by with that. But they probably had ARs. They looked to an untrained person. You know, they're unaccustomed to guns. They looked like probably like a full automatic, like a machine gun. But be that as it may, they had semi-automatic rifles and shotguns out in front of the courthouse. And get this, she also told me they had the names of her husband and her son and Brian Williams, the neighbor that was involved. They had like names and like that they were using like an effigy. And hang on one second. Hey, Rand, you need to control that noise, young fella. Mute if you're not, or, because we're getting a lot of extraneous noise in here. I hate to do that, but you know. But anyway, and I want Rand to get mad at me. But anyway, they had these signs out there. You know, we need to get these guys. We need to kill them. We need to do all kinds of bad things to them if they're not convicted. I'm going to tell you something else. Here's something else you've got to put up with. They had this guy calling her and texting her from Tennessee. This is a story she told me. And he was threatening to come down to Georgia to do all kinds of horrible things to her, and especially her daughter. You can kind of imagine what he was saying. Well, she contacted the authorities in Tennessee, and get this: this is the way it is nowadays. They told her, "Don't worry, he can't come down to Georgia because he's like on some kind of a bond, out on bond here for another crime, and when you're out on bond, you're not allowed to cross state lines. So he's already convicted of a felony. I mean, get that. I'll say that again. He's already convicted out on probation for a felony, just like this stinking Ahmaud Arbery was already out on multiple felonies. And they told her not to worry. And then, so they wouldn't do anything about it. The Tennessee authorities would not do anything about it. The Georgia authorities would not do anything about it. And get this. The people that she had grown up with forever. You heard her. You heard Miss Lee say her dad was a very well-loved. He was an old country doctor, kind of like if you've ever watched Gunsmoke. It reminded me, when she told me about him, it reminded me of Doc Adams on Gunsmoke. Dealing in taking vegetables, maybe somebody cured a smoked ham, taking ham and vegetables and stuff for payment. That's the kind of doctor he was. I forgot to ask. Tell her to remind her. She's kind of, we have, me and Miss Lee have something in common. She's a registered nurse. You heard her say that her son, highly decorated in the Coast Guard. Well, the family had, the neighborhood's family around in her area, the people she'd done all of her life, wouldn't have anything to do with her. And these food trucks she mentioned, we didn't get that as clearly out as I want to, but I'll tell you now, the food trucks they had, the people in the community were feeding these thugs. She said at one time they had an audience of about, well, not an audience, they had a mob out there. She said probably up to about 500 blacks, the new Black Panthers, and you know, these white cucks that always come out there in the BLM and in Antifa, they were screaming for blood. She also told me that they had, at one time, they had Al Sharpton and what's his name, Jesse Jackson. They were in the friggin' courtroom, and they pulled their masks down so she could see who they were, so the audience could see who they were, and just to try to intimidate everybody. And get this, I don't know if we said this on the air last week, but if we did, I'm going to repeat it. It bears repeating. The judge, get this, people. Before they started the proceedings, the trial, he said, we're going to have a 1 minute silence in the courtroom in honor of the poor victim, this Ahmaud Arbery, because he was a dreamer who had his dreams cut short. I talked to a very well-known attorney in our movement, and he said he's asked other judges. He's been, this guy I'm talking about, this attorney, has been an attorney for 30 years, maybe more. He said he's never seen that happen. He never even heard of anybody else knowing of a judge doing that. And you know what? In any place in the world, any place in the United States in a former time before we became a communist, Bolshevik, Jewish, Zog, Zionist occupation country, that judge would have been tried probably and put in jail. It would have been a mistrial right off the bat, without speaking. Anyway, I've been rolling too long. I just wanted to tell you all about that. Blood River Radio, we're going to try to do all we can for this lady. Of course, we don't have any money ourselves, but we're going to try to get this this word out as far and wide as much as possible. And people, I'm going to tell you something else. That could be you. That could be me. And also, I talked to I'm not going to give the name of the inspector of the private investigator who worked on the case, because the guy's afraid. He's actually afraid for the first time in his life. He said that there's been some a lot of nasty people working in this against him and against us. The guy could lose his life. He could lose everything. So I'm not going to give his name out, you know, but the guy, he's one of the, he's about the only other person in the state with any reputability that stood with this, with Miss Michael. She's telling the truth when she said she feels like she's on the island. But hopefully we'll get the private investigator on the air. I kind of feel bad about it in a way, about trying to get him on. He may come on next week or the week after next. We probably have to record him. I kind of feel bad in a way. In a way, I feel like telling him, no, don't come on if your life's in danger, and if you're in danger of losing your business that you have spent a lifetime building up. We may have to redo this. And if he comes on, I want him to use his name, because if you don't, you won't have any credibility. So we may, that's a double-edged sword. Anyway, everybody knows Rand Owen. We have him on the line. And we also think Mr. Buddy may have called him right now. So, Mr. Buddy, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. Can you hear me okay, Eddie?
Yes, sir. I hear you just fine. We have you on the line, and we have our dear brother Rand Owen, another League of the South. He is the chairperson of the Alabama League of the South. But anyway, Mr. Buddy, what did you think about? Tell the audience anything you would like to say about this case, about what you've heard in the interview. Anything you would like to, any comments you have to make?
Well, there are a few of them that keep me awake at night. Honestly, I've lost sleep over this idiotic thing, because when you stop and consider what the judge alone, the way he has acted, almost everything he has done, he acts more like a part of the prosecutor's team. And as it was well pointed out, he was lamenting over the death of the suspect there and asked for this moment of silence. I mean, that is unreal. As I said, he acts more like a member of the prosecutor's team. And of all of the evidence that the defense had, it was enough really to come up with a not guilty verdict. But he would not let the defense introduce so much evidence against this suspect. He was nothing but a typical young criminal black boy, and his record proved that. Now, one thing that got me to studying this thing, I didn't follow it very much at the front end until I found out they got one dead suspect and three individuals.
Mr. Buddy, we have to go to a quick break. We have to go to a quick commercial break, Mr. Buddy. We will be right back. Mr. Buddy, don't lose that train of thought, because we're going to go right back to you as soon as we come back. And also, Mr. Buddy is the one, we've got to give him some credit, because he's the one that got this whole ball rolling. Be right back, people. Hang on to your seats.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week, because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death. Like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
This is Attorney Jason Ruff, General Counsel of the Knights Party based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
Blood River Radio family, God bless you. You know, in case I forgot, it is March the 12th, man. We had a big snow here in Memphis last night, even though it's supposed to be spring. I got my long run in just under the wire yesterday before the hard weather. The horrible wind was bad. But anyway, listen, we're going to go right back. Mr. Buddy, and before we go back to Mr. Buddy, I'm going to let you people know, Mr. Bertie Kirkland, who's on right now, and Miss Nancy Hitt, I think I'm pronouncing her name right. They are the two people that got this whole operation started. They are the one that they fixed up the connections. They got where I was connected with Miss Lee McMichaels. Without Mr. Buddy and Nancy, Miss Nancy, we wouldn't have been able to do this. I guarantee you. I couldn't have talked to her. So I want to thank you people. We owe a great debt to people like Mr. Buddy Kirkland. He's been in this movement. He's been a patriot all his life for years and years and years. He's pumped untold amounts of money into helping people, fellow white people, in doing the Christian thing. And so has Miss Nancy. But I know for sure I've known Mr. Buddy for a long time, and a better person. You will never find a better person this side of heaven. So anyway, go back to you, Mr. Buddy. Continue on.
Okay, Eddie, the thing that really punched my button was when they threw that first-degree murder charge against three individuals when only one fired any shots. And I find out that Mr. Bryan was a neighbor that was following the event in his truck with only a camera. And how in the world can you charge someone with first-degree murder that's doing nothing but taking pictures? Well, I found out that they twisted the law. It would take an idiot, which we've got lots of them over there, to determine that he had somehow blocked in this Ahmed fella with one truck. So in pulling up the various videos, I've got the one that is extremely important, and it shows the suspect running down the right side of the truck, down the right side of the road at that moment. When he gets past the truck, he could have run in 270 degree different directions. He was not any more harmed hemmed in than you and I. And he makes a 90-degree left turn when he sees Travis over just off the left front of the truck. So Ahmed makes a left turn and charges Travis. And that's when the fight begins. And as the evidence shows, he grabbed the shotgun. Any idiot that would charge someone that's holding a firearm and engaging them in a fight they're asking for trouble. In other words, they initiated the confrontation. As I said, when he passed the truck on the right, there were 270 different degrees he could have run uninhibited. Now, the McMichaels were not after him to kill him, as the judge has implied. The judge said something to the effect that they hunted him down to kill him. Well, they could have done that 5 minutes before. Anyway, the fight that Ahmed starts with Travis McMichael, the gun goes off and fires the first shot that injures Ahmed's hand. From there on, it's a struggle, and there are two more shots that get fired, and that was the end of it. But now we've got the man with the camera, Mr. Bryan. How can you charge somebody with first-degree murder when they're doing nothing but standing there looking at the event and filming it? And what it boils down to, Eddie, we've got a third world that's developed in America where the courts are kind of like those in the old Soviet Union or communist China. They know what the decision is, and they go through a court proceeding just to make it look legal. And each and every one of us had better get involved, because the same thing could happen to us if we defend ourselves against a black person and we come out ahead, even when we are doing nothing but defending ourselves, as we have seen in this case. They were defending themselves and get charged and convicted for first degree murder, three people. Now, that first degree murder charge applied to all three of the defendants, and each one had a different role in the event. How can you find a first, or the reason to apply a first degree murder charge when every one of them's role was extremely different from the other? And only one had a gun that went off. The other one was not fired, and the other one was only armed with a camera. But the prosecutor in that case actually threw the facts out the window. They were so bloodthirsty to crucify three white people that they threw the facts out the window. So that's just typical third world justice, and that's what we're faced with. And each one of us are faced with it if we have to have an encounter with some crook like that.
Yes, sir. You know, secondly, another fact, Miss McMichael had told me the truck had been parked, Mr. Buddy, for a few minutes, and the suspect, Aubrey, ran out. He fled the scene. He ran out. They didn't even know where he went. He was totally out of sight. He returned to the scene more than once. Like this happened two or three times. He would run off and come back, run off and come back. Because people, keep in mind, the man has been diagnosed as a schizophrenic, a violent schizophrenic. He was supposed to be taking medicine for his schizophrenia, but he was off his medication. So more than likely, any scientist, any doctor would say that made him even more violent. So this is the point, people, vital point. The man fled the scene, returned to the scene, refled the scene, returned to the scene. And the judge, like to point out what Mr. Buddy said, and the stinking judge said, the prosecution said the truck had him boxed in. And, how could they? I mean, it's ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous that he would have been boxed in. A second point, they were also charged a double life sentence in prison for the feds. The feds tried him and convicted him of a hate crime. I'm 90% sure on that. Is that true, Mr. Buddy? They had two trials. And Mr. Buddy, you're so right. What it was, It would make Stalin proud what went on down there. It was nothing but a Soviet show trial. And one more point I'd like to make. I know I've got to hammer this point home. 500 hundreds of armed people outside the courtroom like that, threatening the witnesses. Oh, excuse me, they threatened the judge, they threatened the jury, they threatened everyone. Back to you, Mr. Buddy.
Yeah, Eddie, I'd like to point out one more thing. The record is established and shown that the McMichaels, when this thing got started, when they saw the suspect and suspected him of criminal activity, they dial 911. Now, if you're going out and kill somebody intentionally, do you dial 911 first? So that right there shows you they were in an investigative sort of thing and needed police help. And that's what they were waiting for. And see, all of that was totally ignored. They just wanted to hang those men. And on the mob that was inside and outside that building, they were there strictly for intimidation in the neighborhood and in the courtroom. And apparently it worked. I did read one thing that someone sent me, that one of the ladies on the jury said that the intimidation, the mobs, caused her to vote to convict. So that whole case needs to be thrown out completely, and there shouldn't even be a second trial at all. But if they ever have one, at least make it honest and fair.
Yes, sir. Mr. Buddy, if there's any way we can get a hold of that juror, there's probably no chance in hell that she would come on and admit that, because if she was afraid enough, if she was scared enough to convict the man just because out of her own fear. I mean, I can kind of understand that, but really, to me, that is you're scraping the bottom of the barrel for morals and integrity and any type of principles. If you're going to allow yourself to be intimidated like that, and you're going to send somebody to life in prison. And you know what? Something else. One more thing I forgot. Ms. McMichaels told me that the state has pretty much said they're waiting on those boys because they're going to kill them. They're not going to make it out of prison. What they've done, they've given them a death sentence in prison.
That's exactly why that mob was out there. They were armed with things that looked like AR-15s or something like that, semi-automatic rifles, and I noticed one of them had a large capacity magazine. Now, why were they there, and why were they there armed? Intimidation. And it worked. Because I'm a little leery when I see something like a jury that's got 9 women on it. It's just like I'm probably sticking my neck out for criticism, but women have a place in the home. According to the Bible, they're the homemakers, and the man is out making the work. That's sort of beside the point, but when I found out that 9 women, and they issue a lot of, or make decisions on emotion, and this emotion can be intimidation also.
You're totally right. Ms. McNichols said that everyone, all her neighbors, the whole community there, were scared. They were deathly afraid. I mean, and who wouldn't be? I know I keep repeating myself. When you have a huge mob with semi-automatic rifles, shotguns, and they're chanting for blood and they're threatening the city. Well, people, Mr. Buddy, Mr. Rand, we've come to the end of the first hour. We're going to continue some of this on the second hour. We're also going to cover some material that Rand has concerning the Russia Ukraine conflict and bioweapons labs. So we'll be holding on to your seats, everybody. We're transitioning to the second hour. We'll be right back.